Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, February 21st. I'm Ray Graff. The annual Festival of Mardi Gras continues into next week, ending on Fat Tuesday, the 25th. Since many of us won't be able to make the trip to New Orleans, our guest today will bring a taste of the party to us. Food Friday favorite Chef Rick Orlando is in the studio with his top Mardi Gras dishes. So get the beads ready if you must. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Chef Rick Orlando and your Mardi Gras food calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Mardi Gras runs into next week. It ends on Tuesday. They call that the Fat Tuesday. And while New Orleans is the pinnacle of the celebration, we want to help you in this region get a taste of the tradition. To lead our foray into the culinary side of the party, none other than Chef Rick Orlando. Rick Orlando is the chef manager of New World Bistro Bar in Albany. You may have seen him on the Food Network's Chopped program. I believe he tasted victory there. Rick Orlando's TV Kitchen was a PBS show. I don't know if it's still on?
No.
Or maybe the podcast 1 Million String Beans, which is insanely popular. Always great to have Rick Orlando on this program. You got a question about Mardi Gras, New Orleans cooking, whatever, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando, how's it going, man?
Oh, Mr. Graff, everything's going great.
Yeah?
I've got a pop-up tonight in about 3 hours.
Where is it?
Down in Coxsackie.
No way. And you're here to do the show.
Stuff's bubbling on the stove right now. I've got my girl Courtney taking care of me down there. Yeah, I do pop-ups once a month in Coxsackie at a little place called the Lower Landing, which actually feels like New Orleans. It's on the river. It's a little tavern. And, it's not really an operating restaurant. She does parties there. And then I said, I'll do a once-a-month pop-up. So I pick a theme, and, of course, it's Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras this time. And, of course, you've got great food. We'll talk about that in a minute. Before we get to – you have some facts about Mardi Gras that I want to get to. But before that, tell me how you broke the readers' poll at the Times Union. What happened there?
I didn't break anything.
What the heck?
I don't know. I got a little. Somebody sent me a picture from the Times Union saying they're no longer going to have a best chef category because
you win every year.
I don't win every year, but
you won like 8 years in a row, 7 years.
Five, I don't know.
Oh, come on, man.
I had a good run. Yeah.
So that's it. There's no more contest.
Yeah, I'm the UCLA of chefs.
All right, fair enough, man. Well, you.
I guess people don't get UCLA. Maybe we should pick something. The Yankees. I don't know.
Alabama, or is it, you know, I don't know.
Somebody who wins.
Whatever. The number here is 800-348-2551. We have great Mardi Gras food. Let's talk about some of the fun facts that you brought. We have a designated eater here. I don't know if you've met one of our new producers, Jackie Orchard, is here, and she's going to eat today.
Hi, Jackie.
It's very tough for me
to
eat during the show. Yeah.
Eat and snicker?
What have you had so far, Jackie? Yeah, the microphone's
over
there.
Dirty rice and pork tenderloin with pepper jelly. We got some Cajun barbecued shrimp, pan barbecued shrimp with the shell on, where you suck the sauce off the shrimp and then dunk them back in and then eat the shrimp. And then...
Right. That's double dipping, though, right?
That's your dip
ate
away.
I ate the shrimp like an animal.
Did you?
With the shell on, and I got all the juices off, and oh my gosh.
So I brought some classic gumbo, then I brought a gluten-free vegan version of gumbo, shows you that, yes, you can. You can make anything.
What's this, man?
That's a Sazerac.
What's a Sazerac? That's in the Thor movies, right?
Well, I think it might be in a little post-Thor, but Sazerac, maybe. I don't know.
It's a Tesseract.
That's a Tesseract.
Different.
Yeah. Okay.
Sazerac is a cocktail originated in New Orleans.
Can I have a sip of this?
Sure. It's made with straight whiskey,
a
little lemon,
a
little sugar, and a little absinthe.
Oh, that's very refreshing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. It's got the absinthe in it. Good.
Yeah, a little bit. Not a lot. It's not like where you just breathe absinthe into it. You put a little drop or two in there, but it actually...
You can taste it.
Yeah, it opens up the flavor. I went to... there's a great place, if you're ever in New Orleans. It's called the Southern Food and Wine... Southern Food and Beverage Museum. SOFAB.
Yeah.
And if you go with a group, they'll do a whole Sazerac history and demonstration for everybody.
That is delicious.
Learn how to make them. Yeah, the Sazerac is a drink, man. It's not super sweet.
No.
Here you go, Jackie's just piling on the food.
Well, that's
Mardi Gras is a funny thing because when you're not familiar with it or you're not from the area down in New Orleans or Brazil or Trinidad where they have carnival.
Yeah.
We tend to think of Mardi Gras as just drunk people running around making a mess.
Which, I mean, that also happens.
It does happen because 1.2 million people descend upon New Orleans, which is just maybe a little less than a half a million people for this weekend. 1.2 million
I'm sorry,
people.
That's amateur hour. Don't do that.
Except, so Mardi Gras is actually a religious holiday.
Right.
A religious celebration.
Right.
Lent, if those of you aren't familiar with the Catholic religion, Lent is a run, what is it, about 6 weeks where you have to abstain from drinking and dancing, and you're supposed to be, you know, not eat meat. And,
right.
So going back to like the 1600s, there was always carnival, which is the few days leading up before Lent. Everybody had a big party to get it out of their system.
Fatten up.
Right. So it started in New Orleans around late 1600s, early 1700s. But it started as a community event. There's something called crews with a K, K-R-E-W-E-S. And they're like community groups. They're like the Elks Club, you know?
Yeah.
And they built, they do parades and they build giant floats and they would throw gifts to people. And so over the years, the gifts had become the fake beads and the stuff from China. But in general, the whole idea was that it was like a Christmas. You got a gift, you had a drink, you danced, there was music in the streets. But, you know, if you go to New Orleans for Mardi Gras, it's fun to go down to Bourbon Street and see the main parade. How's that Sazerac, Ray? Glug, glug, glug.
That's good Sazerac.
But there are other parades all over the city, and there's also Mardi Gras festivals all over southern Louisiana.
Yeah.
But some of the parades, like if you want to go to the Marigny or some of the other neighborhoods, there's actually neighborhood Mardi Gras with kids involved and the Boy Scouts. Well, maybe not the Boy Scouts. We'll leave them out. Girl Scouts. Well, you know what I'm talking about.
So
community groups.
A little less bawdy is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Bourbon Street brings the bawdy out of people. You know, but
you've been down for Mardi Gras in the past,
yes.
Right?
It's a party. And it's mostly out-of-towners. And I'll tell you a funny story about 7 or 8 years ago, I went down to New Orleans. I like to go late October, early November when the tourists kind of fade. And it's a good time to go, not too cold. And for some reason, the town was packed with really kind of over-the-top revelers kind of drinking and yelling and making a mess.
More so than usual.
More so, yeah. And I was, it's not like that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, festivals are one thing. And I couldn't figure out what was going on, and then I realized the Giants were playing the Saints.
Oh, so it was New Yorkers causing
a couple thousand New Yorkers down and saying, I'm on Bourbon Street, let's go crazy.
It takes less than a couple thousand to cause trouble, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting. The number here, by the way, if you have a question about Mardi Gras for Chef Rick Orlando, is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. This is big. So the pop-up that you're doing tonight in Coxsackie,
mm-hmm.
is going to be the stuff you brought today and more?
Yeah, this is some of it. We do like 5 or 6 courses, really no menu. I make what I feel like. This one, you know, I kind of sketched it out. But, yeah, there'll be stuff on the table to start, different pickles and vegetables and dips. And then we're doing the Cajun pepper shrimp or pan barbecue shrimp, which are ubiquitous to New Orleans, which is a way of, first of all, the shrimp we use at the restaurant, and these shrimp are Louisiana shrimp. They're Gulf shrimp.
And how do you get them?
Well, I get them through my distributor.
Yeah.
And you can get them at Finn, your fishmonger, if you ask for them. They'll bring them in for
you. There you go. Yeah.
And I'm sure a couple of the other people that are actually buying fish, like supermarkets. Occasionally, I've seen them. I know one of the buyers for ShopRite, they bring them in frozen, but they're fine frozen.
You know, I got to tell you, sometimes we'll get the shrimp cocktail or whatever for an event at our house or whatever, some kind of shellfish. So much of it comes, and I don't buy, I must say, and I'm not saying which grocery stores, but more than one, so much of it will come from Southeast Asia.
All right, so you've heard my rant on this
before. I won't
before.
Take it, though.
Don't buy Southeast Asian, or don't buy Asian fish, period.
Yeah.
We have amazing stuff in the Gulf, in the Northeast, from Maine, from the West Coast, even from Central America, that's fresh and beautiful, and you can get it.
Yeah.
You just have to go to a place that actually cares about fish, number one, or just ask for it, you know? You'd be surprised that they will bring it in. It's going to cost you a little more because we actually pay our laborers, and we actually raise them in clean water.
Right. I think that's a big thing, too. That scares me.
Yeah.
I mean,
and there's nothing...
The conditions in which they raise the fish, they might be fine, but they might not be fine.
And I want to really straighten this out. There is nothing inherently wrong with a farmed fish if it's farmed sustainably and clean, like right. American catfish, some Bronzino. People kind of this bandwagon. I want anything farmed. It's like, go to the Monterey Bay Seafood Watch and read there. They tell you about every fish in the sea and what's sustainable and what's not. There are some good options out there. But those are wild shrimp. And those shrimp are cooked in the shell. Normally in New Orleans, they just head on shrimp. They just throw them in a pan with lemon and butter and lots of black pepper and some cayenne and lots of herbs. And you sit there with a hunk of bread and you kind of suck everything off the shell and then peel them. Eating with your fingers.
Yeah.
Is a New Orleans thing, and I'm really big on it. I think the more you touch your food, the more in touch with you are, and the better it tastes. They have boils. You ever hear of a boil, like shrimp boil, crawfish boil? You've heard of these things, right?
No, yeah, I guess. I've heard of boils, but not those.
Okay. So, oh, Jesus. So there's a great club called the Maple Leaf that you would love. It's a blues and funk and jazz club in a little neighborhood slightly out of the city.
Yeah.
And every Sunday, they have something called Sunday Supper, $10. All you can eat and blues.
Mm.
So you go in for $10, and they have 5 or 6 long banquet tables lined up, and they literally will boil 10 sacks of crayfish with some corn, potatoes, sausage, and just dump it out. And you go into the bar, and it's a long bar area, and you're literally shoulder to shoulder picking up crawfish off the table, peel them, eat them. And on the floor, they put the empty beer cases, and you just drop the shells in there, and you kick them down. And as you go down the table, When the first table's kind of mostly eaten, they take a squeegee and push it onto the next table and take the tables away until it's all gone. It's community eating. It's really soulful.
Well, I want to ask you about what you said earlier, which was this was pan-barbecued. And I'm going to ask you what that means in a moment. It's Chef Rick Orlando today, Mardi Gras on Food Friday, 800-348-2551. Jackie, the producer, has left. I think she ate enough and probably getting an Alka-Seltzer. She may be back. We'll be back. The man who broke the Times Union readers' poll is here, Chef Rick Orlando.
It's an honor, Ray. It's an honor.
800-348-2551. Food Friday, we talk Mardi Gras. Every year, what's this, third, fourth year you've done this?
Probably more going back in the early days, the old Arbetter days.
Oh, and then, you know. Sure. And, you know, the couple of years ago, you brought the gumbo with alligator.
Yes.
Which is a big badge of honor for me around the house. I tell the kids, oh, yeah, I ate gator. It was really good.
Yeah, I didn't get the gator this year.
That's all right. This email came in from Cheryl. Cheryl says, any tips on using frozen seafood in classic New Orleans recipes? I don't have access to fresh.
Absolutely. Shrimp especially. Most shrimp up north you're going to get frozen because fresh shrimp degrades very quickly and doesn't travel well. Like if you're down in New Orleans, you can buy fresh shrimp. If you're down in Florida, you find fresh shrimp, whatever, Mexico. But when you come up here, they're going to be frozen. That's fine. Just get American shrimp or Gulf shrimp.
Yeah.
And the best way to thaw them is put them in a colander in the sink and run ice cold water on them for about 20 minutes or throw them in the fridge overnight. As far as fish goes, there are some fish that are preparations that are better with frozen fish. You could fry frozen fish because fried fish doesn't really matter. You know, it's going to get moist. Red snapper, which is pretty popular, is better if you're going to use a frozen fish to do it like in a saucy kind of dish, like a Creole sauce or something, as opposed to just broiling it. So, because it does tend to lose a little moisture when it thaws.
But in the sauce, you can't.
You're going to taste it all. And it's fine. Just try to buy sustainable fish. Again, Monterey Bay Seafood Watch is one of the best sources for making good fish choices, and we use it at the restaurant, and it's kind of like my Bible.
Chef Rick Orlando, our guest. It's Mardi Gras today on Food Friday. The number is 800-348-2551, and we'll get to the phones in a moment. Jackie Orchard, one of our producers here, has been chowing in a really impressive way. Tell us about the shrimp, the spices, and how that tastes.
Okay, well, first of all, this is huge. Mm-hmm. And delicious.
You want a napkin? Are you going to use your
oxymoron, right? I'm going to eat it like a wild animal.
Okay, fair enough.
You're eating it the proper
rub
way.
Rub the juices all over my face.
So if you ever go to New Orleans and you see barbecued shrimp, that's what you're going to get. You're not going to get skewers of stuff with tomato sauce on. You're going to get shrimp cooked in butter and pepper and herbs and lemon and absolutely delicious. Little shrimp stock.
When I'm in New Orleans, I'm going to say, Rick Orlando taught me how to eat this, so step back because it's going to get messy.
Who dat? No, I'm sure they don't know what it is.
It'll come with a lot of napkins and a big cocktail, so you're
fine. Maybe just a towel, like a beach towel, and just use it on my face.
Barber's bib.
And before we get to the phones, tell me about this barbecuing in a pan. How do you do that?
It's not really barbecue. It's just a name. They call it pan barbecue shrimp. Barbecue shrimp.
Is that how you win the Reader's Bowl?
Barbecue shrimp.
Because this does not taste like barbecue at all.
No, it's a name. But that's what they'll say. That's what it says on all the menus. They say New Orleans-style barbecue shrimp or pan barbecue shrimp.
So it's a lie.
Or peppered shrimp.
All right, well, tell us how you prepare this in the pan. I assume a cast iron pan.
You can put it in any pan. I make the sauce. It's butter and black pepper and lemon juice and rosemary and cayenne and basil and oregano and some shrimp stock, and you make this buttery, peppery, crazy, liquidy sauce.
Yeah.
And then I put about a half an inch of that sauce in the pan and put the shrimp in there and let them kind of cook on one side and the other. It's kind of simmer them right in that sauce.
I can taste the lemon. It's very lemony.
You know, one of the things, whenever you're here, I don't even know if it's when you're on Mardi Gras shows or what, the roux. The roux that you make haunts my dreams. Okay. Now, is that a New Orleans thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's so good.
Yeah, if you go to my website and go on the recipes, I have a recipe database. You can search Mardi Gras or Cajun. You'll find a bunch of recipes. It's some recipes for making roux. So roux is fat and flour.
Yeah, it's so good.
Right, and classic roux in like a French thing would be butter and flour, just cooked just till it's together. But in New Orleans, they came up with this thing where they cook it slowly over time, and the flour will begin to toast. So they have what they call like blonde roux.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of, you know, 5 or 10 minutes.
Yours was darker.
You go a little longer, it becomes peanut butter roux.
Yeah.
It gets the color of peanut butter, and that you're going to want to use with shellfish, lighter stuff. Go a little longer, it becomes mahogany roux, which gets even darker, and that is what you're going to use in gumbo. And if you take it all the way without burning it, right, it's almost like a chocolate roux. It looks like chocolate sauce.
Yeah.
The secret I have for roux is I start it in a cast iron pan, and you want to use a fat that is stable at high temperatures. Clarified butter if you're going to use butter. If you're going to use an oil, you want to use a high temp oil like a sunflower oil, a safflower oil, or what I use in this is duck fat because saturated fats are more stable at high temperatures because roux gets to be about 450 degrees. I have scars on my wrist from some knucklehead spilling roux. I came on the show,
Right. Yes, I remember
that. With big blisters on my hand.
Absolutely, man.
But the secret I have is I crank my oven to 450. I start the roux in the pan, half fat, half flour. Whisk it together, cook it for 7 to 10 minutes. If you burn it, you ruin it. So you don't want to ruin your roux. There's no roux ruining. So I then I pop it in the oven. I set my timer for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
15 minutes, I open the oven. I carefully whisk it. At that point, it's getting kind of golden. 15 minutes more. It takes about an hour checking every 15 minutes to get that deep, rich color. And then you add it to your gumbo to get that nutty, delicious, dark flavor. Now, that one I made for the first time gluten-free.
Oh, really?
I made it with rice flour.
Huh.
I made them both with rice flour.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my wife's gluten-free, and she always says, like, I never eat your gumbo. I'm like, well, you're going to eat it this year. So, yeah.
Would she appreciate that imitation, by the
way? No, that wasn't really her imitation.
We're not on the radio or anything, so.
That wasn't quite her imitation. Right, she's from Queens, but not. Okay. But she's better than that. So this year I made it with rice flour for the first time in a large batch format, and it gave you the nutty flavor, but it didn't thicken it as much, which I'm kind of happy with.
You're cool with this?
Yeah, yeah. It worked great.
What do you think, Jackie?
Really good.
well said. All right, let's take a call. 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando is our guest. Ryan in Malta. Ryan, you're on.
Hi, Rick.
Hey,
I was wondering if you mentioned absinthe, and I thought I remembered that absinthe is banned in the U.S., but it's not. It probably was in its original form because I guess it used to have an opiate in it.
Well, it had wormwood in it.
Yeah.
Which is more of a psychedelic
than
an opiate.
Okay. Well, was that a key ingredient to it being what it should be? I mean, is it worth a trip to Montreal to get some old style absinthe?
Well, are you a poet?
Or
Baudelaire.
But we could substitute brandy eggnog, I guess, for him.
You can get the good French stuff right around here. I know that, and it's delicious.
There's good absinthe around now. It doesn't have wormwood. everything is worth a trip to Montreal to get something really good to drink.
I'm not against that,
especially
food.
If you live upstate. But I'm happy with some of the absinthe that's on the market right now. It's artisanally made, and it's got the same flavor profile, and that's what they use in New Orleans. And if you can't get absinthe, you can always use Pernod, which is similar. You're just looking for that heavy, heavy anise flavor.
That sort of licorice-y.
And there's so little bit of it in the Sazerac. What it does, it just softens the whiskey flavor, you know?
So that was my other question, since on the web, I found the place I usually get my stuff at. It's pushing a full tank of gas of $40 for 750 milliliters of absinthe. So I was wondering, is there a substitute that's good enough?
Not for that. And you mentioned not really for any cheaper. Pernod is going to cost about the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
But literally,
Sambuca or Ouzo.
No, I think they're too sweet. I mean, Ouzo might be okay. I think Sambuca has too much sugar. But, you know,
A bottle
of absinthe will last you a long time unless you're in a rush.
And it's a drop or two in this.
Yeah, I probably put about a tablespoon in that.
And again, I apologize for Jackie and I drinking the entire thing.
I've had some.
Okay, good. It's very delicious. And what's in that now besides the absinthe?
Whiskey.
And magic.
The Tesseract.
Whiskey, Sazerac.
Sazerac.
And
what is that?
I use rye.
Rye. Oh, it's rye.
Yeah.
So any kind of rye.
Canadian you don't want to use a smoky bourbon. You want to use a rye.
Okay, very good.
Or a Canadian will work, but a
and
rye
it's got
is
some
better.
Citrus in there.
Squeeze a lemon.
Yeah.
Normally, you can use a sugar cube. I put about a half teaspoon of sugar, shook it up. You want to just add, you don't want it very sweet, but you're taking the whiskey and you're tempering the flavor by adding a little anise, a little sour, and they go right down. I mean,
so refreshing.
You just sit at a bar and drink Sazeracs. Just like Hemingway, you know, all day long.
Do you make it at home, Rick?
Sometimes, yeah. And one of my favorite bars in New Orleans is the Carousel Bar at the Monteleone Hotel. Family-owned hotel right on Royal Street. And the bar literally is circular and slowly turns all day.
Oh, nice.
And that's, a lot of famous
people. That'll make you feel drunker than you are.
Well,
it's
you
pretty
know,
slow.
It's pretty cool because you look up and someone different is across from you next time. But
yeah.
They one day we were there. It was a Monday before the Trump election, actually. And we were having an election party the next day at my friend's house. A bunch of New York politicians I know, not politicians, but people who are in the government, live in New Orleans. So they have a house. So we go down there. And it rained all day to the point where there was like 6 inches of water in the street. So we went to the Carousel Bar around noon and we're waiting for it to stop raining. And at 8 o'clock, we wandered up to our room.
That was a long day.
Yeah. And the Sazeracs just keep flowing.
How many years have you, when's the first time you went to Mardi Gras? How many years?
12, 15, 18. And I haven't been since. I haven't been to Mardi Gras since.
Oh,
I've been to New Orleans many times.
But, has the scene, in your estimation, cheapened or become more commercialized in that time?
No. I think that, again, hang out on Bourbon Street. It's been that way since even before the hurricane, maybe the 80s or 90s once, But the rest of New Orleans is still the same. It's community stuff. It's neighborhoods. It's people from the neighborhoods. It's pretty good. You can go into any of the wards. They have their own parades. They have the one of the great things to see are the Indians. If you've, who Dr. John is, right? He's always in the giant outfits.
I think
watched Tremé.
Mel Tormé?
No, Tremé, show Tremé on HBO.
That I haven't seen.
Great show about post-Katrina New Orleans. It's a drama. There is this whole group of Native American, African American people who are the Mardi Gras, they're the Indians, and they spend all year making their costumes with the feathers and the beads. Giant, and they have these amazing, amazing parades, usually on the Sunday before Mardi Gras and on Mardi Gras. Mm. And that's where a lot of that really wild, really fun, crew music comes from.
Ah.
The Indians, where they're chanting and dancing, they're real African sounding music.
Yeah.
Really cool stuff.
What's in the jar here?
Okay, so I made a little hot sauce.
Drink it.
No, just a little hot sauce to drizzle on your stuff.
So
I call it monkey
Jackie
sauce, and it's kind of a regular fermented red pepper.
You call it monkey sauce?
Monkey sauce, yeah, because it's a little fermented red pepper hot sauce, similar to a Louisiana hot sauce.
All right.
Except that I add a little banana to it at the end.
She's drinking hot sauce. She is a new employee. Good job.
I don't have any water in here.
You're
is it good?
Put it on your,
this is a bad idea.
Have a bite of rice.
The rice is hot, too. Everything here is hot.
Okay, come on. We've got a panic situation.
Fine.
Have another sip of the monkey sauce. The number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about Mardi Gras cooking with the famous Rick Orlando, 800-348-2551. So you also made a vegan dish here, I see. And that's your gumbo, but vegan style?
That's a vegan gumbo. It's so there's a vegetable gumbo that you can find all over southern Louisiana called green gumbo. Now, sometimes they throw a ham bone in it, but green gumbo. And, you know, we do this 5 days at the restaurant every year. We did it in Sorority's for 25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're drinking hot sauce. You wonder why you're turning red. You're not supposed to drink it. You're supposed to add it to your food.
Ray looks really red right now.
Go ahead, Mr. Orlando. What were you saying?
How's your heart?
It's fine.
Feeling
everything's
good?
Fine. Everything's
okay. Cleared your arteries for you.
Yeah, it's okay.
Anyway, we do this at the restaurant, right? Every year. And in the restaurant, we make sure that we have options for everybody. So over the years, I developed a really good gumbo recipe using no meat. And that's got black-eyed peas. This one has butternut squash. It's got kale. It's in a rich vegetable stock. It's got some gluten-free roux and all the other good flavors that I use to build my gumbo, my Cajun seasoning, a little bit of Tabasco. But it's refreshing and good. And it's good to know that if you're vegan or gluten-free, you don't have to be left out.
You don't have to sacrifice taste.
Right, because most of the traditional foods down there are based on seafood and meat, you know, right. And that's the way it goes. That's people, and a lot of it's poor people food. As the Italians say, piatti poveri. It's made from, no one's eating filet mignon. You know, it's like a ham bone and a fish head and some rice, and we're eating, you know. Some alligator, some crawfish.
Yeah,
I mean, we think crawfish are a delicacy, but crawfish are basically also known as mud bugs. I mean,
they're like,
you know, they're the food of poverty. And that food has been elevated over the years. And the elevation of the food really started in the 80s with Paul Prudhomme and those guys. You know, they started taking Cajun food and making it elevated. You know, up until the late 80s, the Creole food, which was the sophisticated food, and the Cajun food, which was the down-home, down-and-dirty food, did not mix.
Oh, very interesting.
You either ate Creole, beautiful piece of filet of fish, you know, with some sauce, or you ate Cajun food, which is like a pot of gumbo with alligator tails and mud bugs and duck and whatever's in there. And they've come together as
so,
one.
Okay, so that is one thing that has changed in the last 18, 20 years.
The food
years.
Has changed. Yeah. I mean, you know, New Orleans, people joke that New Orleans is the same seven dishes over and over again. It's like that in Italy. It's like that everywhere. They have the dishes that you know when you visit, you have to have. I got to have gumbo. I got to have this.
And all these have the Holy Trinity, right?
Etouffee.
Most of them. Shrimp doesn't.
The Trinity is?
Celery, pepper, onion.
You're writing that down, Jackie?
Yeah, I'm writing it down.
By the way, we'll take a break here. And I recommend folks never drink monkey sauce just out of a shot because it's I'm not well. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back with more of your calls. Welcome back to A Food Friday. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Chef Rick Orlando is here as we celebrate Mardi Gras. Kind of a tradition on this program. Jackie Orchard, our producer, you tried the vegan gumbo. Give me your thoughts before we get to the calls.
I did. Well, Ricky, I can call him that.
Oh, my God.
No one else can call him that but me, but Ricky made this for me special. Okay. And the squash is really good, and the whole thing is actually very smooth. It's only got a little bit of heat.
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
Well, you know, the thing about Cajun food is it's spicy but not hot. There's a lot of spicy going on, and that's why you bring the monkey sauce on the side for those who want to make it hot.
Bring the heat.
Here,
right, Ricky?
Here, put a little of that on there.
Well,
it's not that hot,
we don't have to revisit this moment.
Let's do a West Indian show. That'll make you cry.
I've done that
or Thai.
Stuff. Now, what is in the monkey sauce?
I ferment. I make every year when the chilies are in peak season around October. I buy as many red chilies as I can. They can be red jalapenos, red serranos, long reds. It doesn't matter. And I ferment them with salt to make hot sauce. And then that's just with vinegar and the chilies and a little garlic. And I puree it. And then when it's almost done, I throw a couple of bananas in to give it, instead of like some places use xanthan gum to add a little thickness,
yeah.
I put banana in there. And the banana gives it more of an aroma than any flavor.
Yeah.
And so we called it monkey sauce.
You know, the thing is, you're of Italian heritage, so the spices don't maybe get to you as much. I'm of German heritage. One sip of the monkey sauce and my head is a sponge.
No Italian sip hot sauce, Ray. We add it to our food.
All right, fair enough. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Sean in Williamstown. Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Yeah, hey, guys. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Hey, great conversation about the only thing I like better than good spicy Cajun food is the Sazerac.
Ah.
And just wanted to throw out a comment and ask a question about that. So just to help a guy out, that previous caller asking about a less expensive version of absinthe.
Mm-hmm.
I've never actually had absinthe, but when I was first given the Sazerac recipe, I was told to use herb saints.
Okay, well, that's
what
like
is it?
Herb saint, herb song. It's like Pernod, okay. Same thing. Pernod, yeah. Herb saint,
it is.
Richard,
okay.
So same thing. Yeah, good. Yep. But you, okay. But
yeah,
you know, for years it was no.
It's less expensive.
I don't think it's all that much less expensive. I mean, you can buy a bottle of absinthe for in the mid to upper 30s, and you can buy a bottle of Pernod for 40.
Yeah.
They're about the same, but you can also get, they sell little bottles of absinthe, like little, they're cute little, I forget the brand, but I got it at home. They're like little decorative fun bottles, maybe
take
about
them to your poetry slams.
Yeah, exactly. Fits in your pocket.
Yeah, I'll have to try absinthe next. It was the actual recipe from Sazerac. Whoever actually makes and bottles the brand of bourbon called Sazerac.
Yeah, whiskey.
They advertise
rye.
It, and they even have a postcard showing it with a bottle of herb stamps. So it's all I ever tried. And to your point about how you use so little of it, I think that bottle probably lasted me about 5 years because it's the only drink I ever used it in.
Yeah, every once in a while in the summer, I have Pernod, which is very similar, and I do like the flavor of licorice. I'll make Pernod and soda and just sip it on the porch.
Yeah, and thanks, Sean, for the call. I like Pernod right on the rocks. It turns different color.
Yeah, it turns creamy yellow,
it's
like
very
banana
cool.
colored almost.
Yep. Let's go to Allison in Albany. Allison, you're on with Chef Rick Orlando, but don't call him Ricky.
Okay. First of all, love you both. I listen to WNC all the time, and I go to New World all the time.
Oh, love you back.
thanks. So really quick story. 7 years ago, I had my first date with now my soon-to-be husband at your restaurant.
Woo.
Ah,
and
success.
He wanted
it,
to
girl.
Order. He wanted to order mud bugs. And I knew what they were, but he didn't. And they brought the dish out to us, and he looked down at the dish, and he looked up at me and at the dish, and he said, "Are you going to show me how to eat these?" And I said,
uh-huh.
And I was wondering if you were ever going to make them again on your menu.
I will. They're kind of not in season now, but they will be in probably crawfish.
Yes, crawfish.
I would say look
and
for them. Look for them around April when they're in peak season.
Okay.
Also, keep in touch with me on social media. We did... oh, my God, I can't remember the name of the place. It's a place out in Malta. My friend Sean Spillane runs.
Sean's place.
Nanola, which is a big Cajun restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Last summer,
you
we did
a crawfish boil.
We did a crawfish boil, yes, in the middle, right, the beginning of the summer. Right in the yard. So, yeah, they'll be around.
Allison, when are you getting married?
Next February.
Oh, that's great.
Good for you. Congratulations. We've had so many romances kindled over my food. It makes me very
but
proud.
But how many of them over mud bugs? Let's be honest.
You know what?
So
that's what my food's all about. Let me tell you something.
Romantic.
Eating with your fingers is a way to get to know somebody.
When you tell somebody to suck the head when you barely know them,
it's going to be
love.
Well, Allison, thanks a lot for that. I'm going to let
that?
You go now.
And it does work.
Thanks
and
the
reason why they say that, just to clarify, there's no pornography here.
Well, fine.
In a crustacean like a crawfish or a shrimp, the fat is in the part that looks like the head.
Right.
Best part's in the head.
So when you pinch the tail,
right,
you break the crawfish in half. When you pinch the bottom of the tail, the meat kind of pops out so you can eat it. So you pinch the tail, and then you take the head, and you squeeze it, and you suck all the fat out, and that's where all that rich flavor is.
All right, well, Allison, thanks for that one.
And, Ray, you're turning red again.
Hand me the monkey sauce, will you please? The number's 800-348.
Don't do it!
255. Oh, that's good monkey sauce.
Oh, my God.
Bess in Albany. Bess, you're on.
Oh, yes. Hello.
Hello.
When you cook shrimp with... Yes,
hi.
I'm here.
Hi.
Hi.
When you cook... Hi.
Hello.
When you cook shrimp with the shell on...
Mm-hmm.
And it's not deveined. Is there any way to devein shrimp cook with the shell on, or is it just not a concern when you prepare shrimp that way?
Actually, believe it or not, in New Orleans, you'll probably get them whole, but if you look at the... Did you eat all the shrimp already?
No, she left you one.
Hold
one
up.
We actually take a scissors
and
cut down the back and take the vein out while leaving the shell intact.
Oh, look at that.
If you're so you do
go through the work and the effort and
yeah, because these are really big shrimp too, and they're wild. So yeah, they're loaded.
See it, because I don't like to see it with a shell on shrimp. I really don't like to see that black vein in there aesthetically.
No, the smaller shrimp, it's not really that big a deal. If you go to New Orleans and get the little barbecue shrimp and the little small head on shrimp, you're just going to get a hole. And you know they say get the funk, as they say in New Orleans. You know.
Okay.
Cut down the back with the scissors, rinse them with a little water, you can pull it right out.
Bess, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest, 1-800-348-2551. I'll tell you what, our producer is certainly making quick work of the shrimp. I'm glad you didn't bring three or four dozen.
I could have. So listen, I want to talk to you about something about that people don't know about New Orleans. You know, we think about the French influence.
Yeah.
The Creole influence is French, African, Spanish. There's a lot of Caribbean influence, but Italian. Italian is very big in New Orleans.
When were the first Italians in New Orleans?
So the Mississippi River was like the main thoroughfare of America through the 1800s. All the citrus in America came through New Orleans. It was all Sicilians. Sicilians basically built the waterfront on the French Quarter on Decatur Street.
Yeah.
And the company that actually ended up becoming, I believe, Dole, was originally called International Fruit.
Right.
And it was Sicilian oranges and lemons picked in Sicily and shipped by boat and then went and brought to New Orleans to be distributed around the country. And so there are restaurants that, and a lot of the recipes have a strong Italian influence.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. I mean, there's also Italian restaurants, which are really good. But that Italian influence on Creole cooking is something that people don't really think about because you think of French and Spanish, but the Italian is very much there.
It really is a mix, though. There are so many influences.
That's
there.
The Creole. And then the African. Now, the thing about New Orleans is because New Orleans was an independent state during slavery, Louisiana, right? Black people were free.
Right.
And then they weren't. And then they were. And then they weren't.
Yeah.
But they're integrated. Their food is integrated into the mainstream food in a much different way than it is in the North.
Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. It's Food Friday Mardi Gras today. 800-348-2551 is the number. And let's go to Chuck in Latham. Hello, Chuck.
Hi.
Hi, Chuck.
I wanted to ask Rick why you don't tend to see goat featured particularly prominently in Cajun cooking, because it's really a staple of a lot of Caribbean cuisine, and it's so close, and I'd imagine there'd be a lot of influence in Cajun from Caribbean cuisine, but you don't really tend to see goat in Cajun cuisine at all.
Yeah, I think it has to do with the natural habitat of goats. A lot of the Caribbean islands ate goat because they basically lived, a lot of those islands are mountainous, and the goats were there, or if they were brought there, they really acclimated themselves there. There's a lot of rocks, a lot of cliffs, a lot of mountains. New Orleans and southern Louisiana is very flat, and I don't think that's the kind of place where you're going to find goat. The only real meat, other than wild meat like duck and, of course, all the fish you find on there is pork, because the Spanish brought pork everywhere they went and let them run free. And that's why pork is so popular down there. But I don't think it's a place where goats would be able to sustain themselves if they escaped. You know, we're talking a couple hundred years ago.
Yeah.
Most of the meat that you eat were either wild cattle that became domesticated or pigs that escaped and then became domesticated. So I can't imagine goats living in the swamp.
All right, Chuck, thanks for the call. You know, I got to tell you, only had the gator here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan. I like it.
It's mild.
I really
tender.
Like it. You had the gator, Jackie?
I've never had gator.
It's good.
None
good
of
stuff.
This is gator, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, why?
There might be a little bit in the gumbo.
No, if it were here, I would try it and be like, this gator.
I think there's a little bit in the gumbo. I only had a couple pounds, so I cut it up, put it in the gumbo. You might find a piece or two.
Looks like a little piece of pale
stew meat. Yeah, gator is tender. And again, this is, again, piatti poveri is an Italian phrase for the food of the poor, plates of the poor.
Yeah.
To me, the whole New World brand that I've built is based on the food that people ate and the flavors they built with what they had. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to fly in microgreens from Israel in the middle of winter because I want to have my plate. I want to eat what's available, and I like to celebrate what built us as cultures, individually and collectively.
Has that always been your philosophy?
Yeah.
I mean, is that why you got into this business?
In a lot of ways, it is. The New World Home Cooking brand started when I was at Justin because I had a little catalog called The New World of Home Cooking, and I would sell ethnic ingredients. So now you can get everything everywhere, right? There's the internet, there's Central Avenue, you have every type of shop there is. You can shop on Central Avenue and stock your house with a world of food, right?
Right.
25 years ago, that wasn't the case. So I used to go to the Bronx. I used to go to Philly. I used to go to Boston and fill the back of my overheating Volvo wagon with all these ethnic ingredients and bring them up to Albany. And then at a certain point, chefs started saying, where do you find lemongrass? Where do you find this stuff? And then we started a catalog and we started selling the stuff mail order. And when we opened our restaurant, we were too cheap to get a new brand name, a new business identity. So we just kept New World Home Cooking.
Yeah.
But it's based on, immigrants and the people that have come to this country and brought their flavors. I lived in Queens for a couple of years. My wife's from Queens. Queens is the biggest melting pot in the country.
Yeah.
You can go.
That's what the governor will tell you.
Get anything you want in Queens. Any food. You imagine it, it's there. 154 languages spoken in Queens right now. My daughter lives in Ridgewood. You walk down the block and you could basically eat anything from anywhere. And it's a beautiful thing because what I love is that when you go into a restaurant owned by immigrants and you're friendly and you are curious, there's always an owner. And the owner wants to tell you his story or her story about why they make the food and how great. And you have to try this because this is what we eat on holidays. And it's an amazing story. And I wish that if more people, skipped Bob Evans and ate at an ethnic restaurant, I think we'd be a happier country because we would all kind of mesh through our food.
And sort of that discovery process is what I believe led you to the 1 Million String Beans podcast.
Well, the 1 Million String Beans name came from when we were closing New World Home Cooking. I did the math and realized that I've sold over 1 million string beans. But yes,
the podcast itself.
Yes. You should be a guest sometime. We'll talk about that.
You know that won't go well.
I think it'll go great. I got some new guests coming up. We're going to be doing Joe Carr next week. Joseph Carr, the winemaker.
Nice.
We're doing Zach Palacio.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun. It's fun. I'm doing what you're doing.
How many have you done?
I think I had 22 so far. That's I had a little good. Flat spot for a while where, I got just too busy.
You need to get a producer. No, I have a couple of producers.
You might know one, Jackie
Orchard.
One of the best, I hear.
Yeah. But I do in my son's, who moved out. My kids are all out. My son's bedroom, we call it Terry's Room Studio. It still has, Black Flag posters on the ceiling and bongs in the closet.
Nice.
I'm
glad you mentioned that on the radio.
It's a vintage studio. It looks like something from the 90s or 80s.
Before we wrap up here, and we still have a few minutes left if you want to call, 800-348-2551. Always wondered this. Never asked this before. Mardi Gras time, is there any dessert, any sweet, anything going on?
Oh, yeah.
I know you didn't bring any, but
I didn't bring any. So the traditional dessert on Mardi Gras is called a king cake. A king cake.
Oh, we did talk about this. Yeah, there's a king inside, or
something.
There's
a baby in there. A baby, a little baby.
There's a baby in there.
Yeah, and in the old days, they were glass.
Real babies.
They were glass or metal. Now they're plastic. A king cake it's not super delicious. It's kind of like a crumb cake, without the crumb topping. And you glaze it, and they put the purple and gold
plus
and
a baby.
Green. And the person who gets the baby is supposed to be, first of all, have good luck for the year. And is supposed to make the cake the next year.
Ah.
So then the other desserts that are popular, which we'll be serving at the restaurant, is Bananas Foster.
Oh, that's a great one.
And you didn't bring that in?
You got to make it. You can't.
Yeah, you're supposed to make it for us, Ricky.
Here, fire?
Yeah.
Okay, Jackie, you're fairly new, but we did do a show where, not too long ago, where
I was here.
Were you here?
Yeah, for the blowtorch.
Yeah, that's
scary. Well, blowtorch is different. This you have
to flavor the smoke was wafting up to the smoke detector.
I'm just hearing excuses.
But, Bananas Foster is the, as far as dishes created by desserts created by restaurants, is the most imitated dish of any dessert in the world. And it started at Brennan's in New Orleans for a gentleman whose last name was Foster, a politician. It was a celebration of his winning an election.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of invented on the spot. There's a great documentary called Commander of the Table about Ella Brennan, who started Brennan's and Commander's Palace and all those restaurants when she was like 19 working for her dad.
Yeah.
And how they invented Bannon's Foster. And when I do my New Orleans tours, which will be back on 2021, we go to Brennan's, and one of the Brennan family, whoever is in the house, will make Bannon's Foster for us in their suit, come out to our dining room and make us Bannon's Fosters and tell the story about it.
You ever had that, Jackie?
That should be a national holiday, Bannon's Foster Day.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's grab
it. Put it on the calendar.
You and Ricky are really hitting it off.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. Emily in Plainfield. Emily, you're
on. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Rick. I've been listening to Rick on the station for so long, and I love his comments and what he brings to food. But what I wanted to say, I heard you mention the TV series Tremé. I think there's four seasons of it.
Yeah.
I just want to recommend it to anybody who wants to know about New Orleans culture. It features, it's a drama, but it talks about food, and it features real New Orleans musicians. I mean, Alan Toussaint is in it. Mm-hmm. Dr. John is in it.
Yeah.
I could go on. The Soul Rebels. It's really good writing.
And Dirty Politics.
And
there's plenty of dirty politics in it, too, which makes it really interesting. It's
very
cool.
A very good story about America, the recovery of New Orleans after Katrina, just brings all kinds of stuff together in these great stories. And Ray, loving music, I think he'd like it because
he'd love
New Orleans music.
And you know who else was behind a lot of the writing of that and producing was Anthony Bourdain.
Ah, the late
Bourdain. It's a great series because it's reconstruction of New Orleans. Yeah, on HBO, okay. And it's available through the eyes of musicians.
I mean, I got all
chefs.
Four seasons out of our library, believe it or not, on DVD, because we're low tech and we watched it. But anybody who wants to learn about New Orleans music, food, culture, and dirty politics, I highly recommend
there,
it.
Right?
And thanks for the show. I'm enjoying it.
Thanks so much for the call. Jackie, you got a question.
Rick, you mentioned that you pick the chilies when they're peak chili season. How do you look at a chili and know that it's at its peak? How can you tell?
Well, because it's late September, early October, and they're red.
That's it. That's
those
the
are
whole
red
thing.
Chilies. They're ripe. Right? Chilies have a long season, and the reason why they're usually grown in the New Mexico, the South, is that they have a longer growing season. But people now up here, we have a guy who grows chilies for us, Farmer Bob in Saratoga. He starts them indoors in March so that they're ripe by October.
So you can start them indoors. I'll have to bring this up at the gardening show. You can actually start them inside, then transplant them into the ground.
Yeah, you don't want to transplant them into the ground until the ground is warm. But they need a good 7 months to get red. And green chilies are delicious, but when they get red, there's much more sugar content.
All right, Rick, we're just about out of time. How do people find out more about your doings and your podcast?
Very simple. It's Rick Orlando, there's no K, .com. Brand new, spanking new, clean-looking website.
Good.
And on there is podcasts, recipes, New World Bistro Bar, my food tours. We're going to Sicily in May.
Nice.
Yeah, so, I'm everywhere. Everybody knows about it.
All right, remember, folks, don't drink the monkey juice. It's it's only a condiment.
It's killer.
Support comes from HGS Home Chef in historic Hillsdale, New York, for cooking classes in two designer kitchens taught by national and local specialists. HillsdaleGeneralStore.com for what's cooking. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. Field goods, fresh produce, eggs, meat, dairy, small batch creations, and more from local farms and food entrepreneurs delivered to workplace and community locations, field-goods.com. At River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Thanks again to Rick Orlando for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King took the calls. Our producers, Jim Lavoulis, and the aforementioned Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks again for being with us this week. We'll be back on Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday. Have a splendid weekend. Stand by for the best of our knowledge.